The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, welcome back. It's Tuesday. And that's several weeks ago now, I guess. Two weeks? News broke that the Georgia Guidestones, originally put together and erected in 1980 with their message of doom and gloom to the world, were blown up. Well, in point of fact, they weren't all blown up. Part of the roof piece was fragmented, and one of the support pillars was broken up, but the rest of it was certainly salvageable. But the next day, the owners had an excavator out there, and they took the rest of it down and hauled it away. So I guess it's one of those stories where, yes, they did tell us. They have this weird, immoral obligation to advise us in advance of what they're going to do to us, and then it's okay to do it. It's kind of like the Kol Nidre prayer. If you recite that once a year, you're forgiven for all sins and transgressions you may commit in the year ahead. Very clever stuff. Anyhow, Frank Joseph is back tonight to talk to us about the Georgia Guidestones, such as they were, and what happened. Hello, Frank. Welcome back.
Hello, Jeff. It's great to be here, as always. Thanks for the welcome.
You're welcome. All right. So, when the Georgia Guidestones went up back in 1980... You remember that. What did you think about it when you figure, or whenever you first became aware of them? What were your thoughts?
Well, I was perplexed, I think, as most people were. And since then, I didn't take too much interest in them. It was only after the explosion that took place earlier this month that I began to really wonder, well, what was this about? Who did this? It's very mysterious. And it was a beautiful work of art. There's no doubt about it. It was beautifully done.
They spent a lot of time on that.
The message included in it was horrific, of course. And I always kind of wondered, well, whoever did this, you know, we'll never know. But after the explosion, I took a greater interest in it, and I did as much research as I could on it. I've never been to the Georgia Guidestones before. Uh-huh. So I knew as much, I guess, as anybody else. There are some really good sources, though, out there. There's one thing called the New Georgia Encyclopedia, for example, which had a lot of great information about it. I mean, specifics. And then there's a magazine called Wired Magazine, and they wrote more articles about the Georgia Guidestones, I think, than anybody. There's also some great articles in the Atlanta Constitution and things like that. It's another good book called Georgia Off the Beaten Path. So reading through these and distilling what I could, I did find some interesting stuff that I don't think most people are aware of. And I think I know, I can't prove it, but I think I know who was responsible for building that thing. And there are some some pretty close, coincidences or circumstantial evidence, however you want to put it, that points to one person in particular whose name will be very recognizable when I share it with you. But the story begins, strangely enough, in June 1979, when this fella came in out of nowhere to a place in northeastern Georgia. It's called Elberton. And in Elberton, it's an interesting little town because they have something called the Elberton Granite Finishing Company. And they are among the top workers in stone in the world. And the stone that they have there locally is the best granite on earth.
This is fascinating. Yeah.
That's an interesting thing of all. If you're going to build a monument as you want like this, you just don't go to any place and say, you know, I'd like to have this huge thing built. This fellow showed up. His name was Robert C. Christian. And he was a man, in his mid to late 50s, just an ordinary-looking guy. Yeah. And he went to the president of the Elberton Granite Finishing Company, who was Joe Findlay. And he went right up to Joe, and he said, well, I'd like to commission your granite finishing company to make a monument, which was no big deal because they specialized in making some of the finest monuments in modern times. And so I said, okay, what have you got in mind? And so then Mr. Christian shared with him what he had in mind, which was the Georgia Guidestones. And Findlay told him, he said, well, we could do it, but it'd be enormously expensive. He regarded, by the way, Mr. Christian as, quote, unquote, a nut. And didn't believe that this was going to happen. And so he gave him a quoted figure that was several times higher than it would have been. And he said, well, we can do it, but it's going to cost you over $100,000, which in those days would have been about $375,000. This is 1979. Mm-hmm. And so Mr. Christian said, done. We'll do it. Just go ahead and do it. And so Findlay said, well, okay, but the way we do something like this, you have to go to the local bank, and the banker down there is going to handle all the finances for it. We won't even accept your money. It has to be done this way because this is expensive. So I said, okay. So that same day, Christian goes over to the local banker and tells him what he wants to do. And he says, but it's got to be all completely anonymous. The name that I'm giving you from myself is a pseudonym. It's not my real name. He's saying this to the bank president. And the bank president says, well, I have to know your real name and some of the people involved in this, or I'm not going to be able to handle your money. So Christian says, okay, I will share that information with you, but under just literally pain of death, just about, yeah, you can share this with nobody the rest of your life. And the banker agreed. He says, yeah, I says, I'd like to have a monument like this built in Elberton, he said, because this would be, we are a little small town here, we're not well known, this would be a tourist draw, something like that. So the banker, whose name was Wyatt Martin, I think was his name, I'm not quite sure. But anyway, his name was, whatever his name was, he said, okay, I'll handle the finances. So the work got underway immediately, and so he said, well, here's $100,000 cash right there. Just peeled off on it like it was nothing at all. Gave that to the banker and says, you take that. While you're designing it, I'm going to find the place where we're going to build this. He says, I already know really where it is. So Mr. Christian went to the highest point of land in Elberton County, one of the highest points of land in Georgia. The reason why he did that is because it had a clear fix on the horizon. There are a number of astronomical, or there were, a number of astronomical alignments that were literally built into the Georgia Guidestones. Okay. And so you needed to have a clear shot. This whole idea of using this part of the country, this part of the world, if you want to look at it that way, had been predetermined by Mr. Christian, quote-unquote, and his associates, whose names and identities have never been divulged, never been found. And this area was just a clear shot for building these very sophisticated astronomical alignments that were going to be put in. The only thing that Mr. Christian ever shared with either Mr. Findlay, who was the president of the Granite Finishing Company, or with the banker, was that he represented a small group of loyal Americans that were very Christian. And as it turns out, of course, we don't know about how loyal these Americans were, who they were. Small group or not, we don't know. But they certainly were not Christian. The Georgia Guidestones have no references to anything about Christianity or Jesus or anything whatsoever. There's nothing Christian about it. A book came out after the Georgia Guidestones were set up a few years later, written supposedly by Robert C. Christian, the same fellow. And it's just a sort of a modern-day Marxism when you read it. It's difficult to read because it's so poorly written. But he does talk about the Guidestones and some brings out some interesting things I can bring out later on. So the Guidestones were being built on this land, which he also bought. The banker said, well, that land, the guy that owns it, the farmer, he doesn't want to sell it. And he said, well, what would he ask for it? And he said, well, he'd ask, like, you know, at least the equivalent then of about $15,000. Mm-hmm. So the guy reaches into his wallet or his pocket and pulls out $15,000 and says, here, just give it to him. So in other words, there's absolutely no reticence on the part. I mean, this is, sure. These people are so flush with cash. Yeah. It's like, you know, they don't even think about it. Money is absolutely no object for Mr. Christian or his people involved. And then when the stones were underway, they found out that to make these specific alignments, they're going to have to call in like professional astronomers and things and uh-huh. get that all paid and special instrumentation. So well, that's going to cost you a few grand more. Here you go. No problem. Just zip right immediately. I want this thing made as quickly as possible. There was never any, nothing equivocal about the amount of money involved. Whatever money was asked, he produced it immediately, gave it to the banker, and the banker took care of it. So things went along pretty quickly. The banker's name was Wyatt Martin. I just saw the name here. I've got some notes here. I can't remember all this stuff. And the banker, Wyatt Martin, was a good guy. He, I don't know if he's still alive anymore. I know he was in his 80s, about 5 years ago or so, and a very devout Christian. And he just thought he was doing something good for the town. The only and he was asked, Wyatt Martin was asked in an interview, well, what can you tell us about this R.C. Christian? He says the guy talked about himself virtually not at all, only was concerned about building this monument. When they were having some difficulties, because this is a very unusual monument that he had, all the specifics, he had pages and pages of architectural renderings and drawings, obviously made not by him, but by other experts. Part of the group that he was involved. This Mr. R.C. Christian appears to have been a representative of this group. And he was just told, you execute all this, you get it all done. He wasn't the designer or the originator of this thing really at all. He was just somebody that was involved. The banker, Wyatt Martin, said the only thing that he said is that he did say once that he, R.C. Christian, was a world traveler. And by traveling around the world many times, he's thought that this project was necessary. The whole project together, not counting the land was eventually, it's an only 5-acre site. And it was just plain, nothing to look at, and that cost $18,000, which he paid for immediately, no problem. The Georgia Guidestones themselves, everything that went into it, was the equivalent today of $375,000. That was the total cost. Very close. We don't know it exactly what it cost, but it's very close to $375,000, which he had no trouble paying whatsoever. It's like he went to Dunkin' Donuts or something and bought a bag of donuts. And that same thing. They were having some difficulty, and so he produced, when Christian found out they were having some difficulty putting this very precise monument together, he brought in a scale model, a beautiful scale model that showed all the details necessary, beautifully done, very professionally made. Somebody had made that. And that model helped them put it together much more quickly. The site was located off Georgia State Route 77 in Elbert County. Like I say, it's in northeast Georgia. And when the structure was finished, it was finished exactly, precisely to Christian's specifications. And hardly any other company, really, in the United States, or hardly any place, would have been as skillful as putting this together as Mr. Findlay's company, which was world-renowned. And, matter of fact, it still is. There's a museum dedicated to this company for all the great things that they do with this absolutely first-rate granite. Like I said, it's the greatest, highest-quality white granite on Earth. When the stones were finished, the monument was finished, it was 19 feet 3 inches tall.
So the guys... Hold on, please.
Yeah,
the guys, that cut the granite slabs... Mm-hmm. Did all the engraving in 9 different languages. That's a lot of work.
Oh, it's a huge amount. They have to hire more people on. That's why it got to be so expensive. But the money, yeah, they just asked for the money. We have to do this, and he would just immediately dole it out like it was nothing.
I got it. How do you make language in granite with a chisel and a hammer? I don't think so. They had to use electric tools that would go in there, impact tools. That would grind out the letters, and whoever did that had to be very skilled. I mean, this is.
And they did a beautiful job.
Yeah.
A beautiful job.
Do we know? Now, here's one other thing. I don't mean to keep interrupting.
No, go ahead. It's great. Your questions are always enlightening.
If Mr. Christian and his fellow Christians wanted to spread the word, they could cut those slabs up. Or offer them entirely in as one piece, people would pay a fortune for those.
Mm-hmm.
Just to own a piece of the Georgia Guidestones. People just like that kind of thing. I mean,
they could
have sold those off. I mean, I could see one in your backyard, one of those slabs sticking up there.
Well, they were beautiful.
Yeah.
Apparently, money didn't really figure into Mr. Christian's calculations at all.
That's us people. Oh, money's nothing to them. They create money.
None is nothing.
So. Yeah.
No, they're beyond money. It's power. Power and energy are limitless, but money is nothing. So the structure, when it was finished, it was, as I say, 19 feet 3 inches tall. It was made altogether from 951 cubic feet of granite. That's a lot. Into six granite.
I want one of those slabs. I want one. I like strange, eclectic things. I want.
You can't have any of those anymore because all that stuff. We'll get into what happened to that later on.
Right.
So the granite, 951 cubic feet of granite, was transformed into 6 granite slabs, weighing a total of 237,746 pounds. That's 119 tons. There were a set of 10 guidelines, or what they call principles, engraved in the Georgia Guidestones in 8 different languages, actually more. We'll get into that. But the Guidestones, the principles, so-called principles themselves, were in 8 different languages. Now, this is kind of interesting, and now we're getting to see a little hint of connections beyond here. Those translations that were made according, and this was, you won't find this in any book, at least any book or magazine article I found, but the banker, before he passed away, or I don't know if he's still alive, he said that all those translations that took place on the Georgia Guidestones came from the United Nations. It was United Nations translators that came in and made sure that they were all absolutely correct, except for the Chinese. There was a local Chinese scholar. And because it is in Chinese, partly in Chinese, these principles are restated in these different languages. So that was kind of interesting that the United Nations was involved in this thing.
Well, most evil, one of the most evil overt organizations on planet Earth. Period.
Exactly. And it fits. It really fits. So if you're moving clockwise, or if you had moved clockwise around the structure from due north, these languages were, and it's interesting, these languages also corresponded to peoples or races, however, or nationalities, ethnic groups, however you want to put it. So it's not only the language. As you can see, when I run through this, you'll see that it's the language and the people. So you're running clockwise around the structure from due north. These languages were English, Western European, Spanish, Latino, Swahili, Black African, Hindi, mixed race, Hebrew, Arabic, Chinese, and Russian, Eastern European. So they're trying to hit all bases there. A few feet to the west of the monument, there was an additional granite ledger that had been set level with the ground. And this tablet identified the structure and the languages used on it and listed various facts about the size, weight, and astronomical features of the stones and the date that it was installed. Got it. It referred to a time capsule buried under the that tablet at the site. Well, after the structure was destroyed, excavation, a pit was dug down to about 20 feet, and no time capsule was found. So I don't know what to make of that. At the top center of the tablet was written this: the Georgia Guidestone Center Cluster, erected March 22nd, 1980. Then you found also nearby the words, "Let these be guidestones to an age of reason." And it was written in English, in Babylonian, in cuneiform script, in classical Greek, Sanskrit, and ancient Egyptian. Now, let me tell you, there is probably no language scholar in the world today that could handle all these languages. I mean, you had some pretty high-powered intellects putting this thing together.
Very much so.
It was more than just a small group. We're talking about a kind of elite, a real, true elite.
Mm-hmm.
The astronomical features were interesting. It had many. There was a sunbeam through the capstone that marked noontime throughout the entire year. The four outer stones were oriented to mark the limits of the 18.6-year lunar declination cycle known as the metonic cycle. The metonic cycle was used thousands of years ago. It looks like it was used at the beginning of ancient Egypt, used and was like lost and then rediscovered by the ancient Greeks. The metonic cycle was invaluable for setting the ancient calendars correctly. This is how you got an accurate calendar, was this metonic cycle, this 18.6-year lunar calendar. And this obscure, arcane astronomical alignment was incorporated for what possible reason in the Georgia Guidestones.
That's fascinating. Hold on right there. This is a good place to pause.
Okay.
All right. Well, I'm counting on you to come through and help me get one of these pieces. All right. We'll talk. Stand by. We'll be right back with Frank Joseph. Really fascinating information about something that we just didn't hear. All these little tidbits. You can hear in Frank's voice the energy that he has for research, that mind, that inquisitive mind, and he finds things out. This is great. Hang on. I'll be right back. You're learning more about the Georgia Guidestones than I'll bet virtually any of you knew, myself certainly included. Go right ahead, Frank. This is great.
Okay. The Georgia Guidestones had numerous astronomical alignments. For example, the capstone was aligned with the North Star, just like the Great Pyramid of Giza. Every day at noon, the sun shone through a 7/8-inch hole in the center stone, and it illuminated the day's date on an engraving. Now, what's amazing about all this is that many things amazing, of course, are coincidental. I don't know how you want to do this. I'm just throwing this out for you and for our audience to try to figure out. 685 miles due south, almost due south from the Georgia Guidestones, was a place called Coral Castle that had been built long before. And
it also had many of the exact same
astronomical orientations.
Ed knew something. Edward Leedskalman knew something. And I'll tell you one other thing, everyone out there. The people in control of this planet don't do anything of any real major significance unless the astrology says okay.
That's right.
Believe it.
Well, the monument was finally unveiled publicly on March 22nd, 1980. and there were about 200 to 300 people in attendance. The vast majority of those people were completely unknown. A lot of them, they tried to interview with the local press, wouldn't talk to them or would never divulge their name. These people are unknown who they were. They seemed well-dressed. They were not local people. There were a couple dozen local people that showed up. It was open to the public. But beyond that, and there were some local politicians and so forth, but the majority of the people that showed up, nobody knew who they were. They were completely unidentifiable, including the master of ceremonies, who said some bizarre things. I won't go into them because there's too many, but he did say one thing which is really interesting. The master of ceremonies, whose name we do not know, photographs of him, nobody's been able to identify who he was. He hasn't been seen before or since. He said, quote, "In order to avoid debate, we, the sponsors of the Georgia Guidestones, have a simple message for human beings now and for the future. Avoid debate, no discussion." That's the kind of mindset that sounds extremely despotic. In other words, there's no discussion. Here it is.
Bolshevik,
deal with
all
it.
The way.
But that's what he says. In order to avoid debate, no discussion. The level of intolerance. Now, what exactly did these Guidestones say? There are 10 principles, commandments, whatever. Most of them are vague. They can mean anything. Some of them are more specific. But at the very top of them, ranged in order of importance and what the main focus of this thing is all about, at the very top it said, quote, "Maintain humanity under 500 million. Well, what does that mean? That means that of the 7.753 billion people today, that excludes 7,249,055,000. That 500 million represents less than 6.5% of the world's population. So they're saying that the world's population needs to be reduced by 93.5%. That's the main thrust, that's the main principle, commandment called for by the Georgia Guidestones. Under that,
and today, when the cull is underway, the world population is now said to be 8 billion. So let's just round it off for fun to 6% left. They like that number, 6.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yes, they do.
They love that 6. So this goes back to what I seriously suggested. They have to tell us in advance what they're going to do in order to be in good with Lucifer
it's
or whoever.
It's part of their arrogance. It's part of their arrogance. Now, in order to fulfill this, to maintain humanity under 500 million, we're told, quote, that we need the establishment of a world government plus population and reproduction control. And then there are a number of things, unquote. And then there's a number of things about obsession with the environment.
Yeah.
I mean, all this environmental, same type of language that we're used to. Then another one comes and says, quote, "Unite humanity with a new living language." In other words, abolish all languages and have one language. Then it also talks at the very close to the bottom that in order to implement all these things, we need, quote unquote, a world court. Now, I would suggest that none of this is Christian any aspect that I could possibly imagine. So when Mr. Christian came in, that was obviously a ruse. He's going into the Bible Belt where Christianity, people are very Christian.
Stuff.
And so that was just a ruse. Now, immediately after establishing the Georgia Guidestones, Mr. Christian, who had ponied up over $375,000 in cash within 30 days, transferred ownership from himself to Elbert County. So he didn't own it at all anymore. He had no names, no name on any of these papers at all. There were business papers that he had to sign with the banker, and there were business papers that he had to sign, even under his pseudonym, with the Granite Company and a number of other experts that came in. All those business papers, including the model that he brought along earlier to build, to help the stonemasons build this thing, were burned. They do not exist. And he specifies that they're all to be burned upon completion of this project, and they were. Everything is burned. So after that, a man who identified himself as Robert Christian published a book entitled Common Sense Renewed. This came out in 1986, 6 years later. And it's virtually unreadable. You can go online and look it up. There's a PDF of it you can read. There are a few interesting things. One of the things he says is that in the future, and he does claim that he's involved with the Georgia Guidestones, and he says that in the future, childbearing, except under certain permittable extenuating circumstances, childbearing will be a felony crime. And he talks about how future leaders will accept all of these principles. They will accept them. As of 2022, just before the Guidestones were demolished, there were over 20,000 annual visitors to the Georgia Guidestones. All that came to a halt last July 6th, when around 4 o'clock in the morning, just 2 days, 48 hours after the 246th anniversary of our country's independence, right, a pretty good size explosion occurred at the site. Apparently, there had been some kind of an explosive device that had been attached deliberately to the Swahili Hindi language slab, which it virtually demolished. And it damaged the capstone really beyond repair.
Who is the arch enemy of the Hindi? The Muslims.
So the nearby residents reportedly have felt these explosions, like, say, around 4 o'clock in the morning. And CCTV footage recorded a vehicle of some kind leaving the scene. The police and the Georgia Investigative Society are supposedly after trying to find out what's going on. The structure was so badly damaged, it wasn't completely knocked down, but it was badly damaged, that the authorities who own the structure, it's theirs, they can do anything they want with it, they came in that same day, July 6th, and completely demolished the rest of the monument because it was unsafe, and it looked as though it really was unsafe. Now, what's interesting is that shortly after these Guidestones were set up in 1980, there was growing local resistance to this setup when people saw what was written on the side of it. And there were all kinds of proposals not to tear it down, but since it was owned by the county, just to replace some of these horrible things that were put on the side of it with things like, well, the Ten Commandments, or quotations from Thomas Jefferson, or something more palatable. But the local government absolutely refused, wouldn't change any of it at all, nothing. This went on for, 32 years. And the momentum for its change grew until some years later there was major vandalism taking place at the site. People from around the country were getting pretty unhappy with that this thing was allowed to stand. And so to prevent further violence to the stones, it was proposed that the message be changed or just removed, just have the object there. But no, the city government was adamant, would change nothing at all, until someone finally decided enough was enough last July 6th, and that's when that happened. Now, the question is, the number of questions, of course, is why was Georgia even chosen? And as I said, it was because a lot of people wondered, like, well, why did they come here to do this? Because the abundance of fine granite, the best granite on the planet, the astronomical considerations, and also because that specific area dominated was the highest elevation in the country, in the county, and the Elberton Granite Finishing Company was one of the finest in the world. There's a couple of interesting things, though, about the Elberton Granite Finishing Company. Every man that worked on the stones, and this came from Judge Wyatt Martin, every man that worked on that on those stones, the owners of the company, they were all Freemasons, all of them, without exception. They were all Freemasons.
What a coincidence.
Yep.
Just kidding.
Now, no, that's true. They were all Freemasons. Now, who was this Mr. Christian? People like wonder, oh, my gosh, we have to find out who Mr. Christian is and we'll learn the mystery of this thing. I don't believe that at all. I think Mr. Christian was just one of the representative of the group. That's all. He was just the executive. Parenthetically, it's interesting that on the day that the Georgia Guidestones were open to the public and they had those 200 or 300 people there, Christian didn't show up. He wasn't even there. You would figure if this guy was playing a major role in all this, he would have shown up naturally. But no, he never showed up. He was never seen after the structures were finished and before the unveiling took place. Mr. Christian vanished and has never been seen before or since.
He was the lieutenant sent out there to do it.
Pardon me?
He was the lieutenant sent out there to do it.
That's it. He was just there to execute it. That's all. So the question is like, who did this thing and why? Well, we can speculate why. One of the reasons is that the controlling elite, whatever you want to call them, they're immensely arrogant. They figure they can do anything they want. They're power freaks. And I think that they wanted to just establish it. That's a possibility. They just wanted to throw it out there and just, what are you going to do about it? Well, somebody did something about it, didn't they? You know, when you think about all of the statues to our heroes and to our American origins that have been thrown in the dirt and desecrated over the last several years, and no outrage. Yeah. As a matter of fact, the people that put on these statues are considered heroes and fighting against the lingering injustices and so on, and nobody does anything. Well, somebody finally did something, and they got that one. They got that one out of the way. Maybe that event on July 6th, maybe that was an opening shot, because the American people are very forgiving, very forgiving. They really are willing to take a lot, and because they're civilized people. But when you reach a certain point, just like nature herself is very forgiving. Mm-hmm. But if you continuously sin against her and you try the patience of people, there is a breaking point. And when that happens, even something as powerful as the British Empire fell to a bunch of ragamuffin riflemen, didn't they? And maybe that's the opening shot. That's just my opinion on it. Well, who built this thing? Who was really responsible? Well, there is an interesting thing, coincidental perhaps, that might, don't say it is absolutely correct, but might refer to the reference the person involved. And that person is Bill Gates. And the reason why I say so is because the monument itself, when it was standing, it looked like Gates. It really looked like Gates. That's one little thing. But there's something else beyond that.
You mean physically Gates. Look physically like Gates.
They physically resemble Gates.
Gates. Gateways.
That's the way these power freaks think, by the way.
Yes.
That's how they think this way. They think they're clever. They're so smart. They're smarter than all the rest of us, and that's why they've got all this power. But beyond that, there are some interesting things. Bill Gates, of course, created Microsoft. That's how he got to be where he is. And he started Microsoft. It was too small. It was too insignificant. So he hooked up with IBM. He convinced IBM to take his technology. That, by the way, Bill Gates never made any technology himself at all. He's an entrepreneur, which is a nice word for opportunist. And it was his co-worker, Alan, that developed that
technology.
He's
not a virologist or a microbiologist either? Gosh.
No, he has.
What is Bill Gates? Oh, he's an idiot. The guy has nothing but money. That's his qualification.
That's it. He has no medical background. But He did, and he has no technological background except what he picked up from his friend Alan. But the interesting thing is that when he created Microsoft back in mid-1975, it took off the ground when he hooked it up with IBM.
Right.
And he was able to finagle things so that eventually he freed himself from IBM, and Microsoft finally became an independent company. That was a gradual process, though, and it wasn't until July of 1979 that Microsoft really established its total independence when he moved the offices of Microsoft from Albuquerque, New Mexico, to Bellevue, Washington. And he did that in early July 1979. We can actually say that early July was Independence Day, the birth of Microsoft. Well, what's interesting about that, of course, is that it was in June, late June of 1979. In other words, only a few weeks before that Mr. Christian showed up in Elberton, Georgia, with his plans to establish the Georgia Guidestones. Is there a connection between those two? That within just literally a few weeks or days of each other, the independence of Microsoft, the true birth of Microsoft in Bellevue, Washington, and the birth, coincidental birth of the Georgia Guidestones at the same time. So I think that it's conceivable. I don't know for sure, but I think it's conceivable that the Georgia Guidestones were made by Bill Gates, and that's not even the most convincing thing. The most convincing thing for me personally is that when you look at what the Georgia Guidestones said, that is the credo of Bill Gates: to limit the population of the Earth, to establish a world court, a language for everybody, everybody controlled. To the extent that you have to show vaccination identification in order to even have any social credit scores. If you look at the Georgia Guidestones, what they say, it sounds like Bill Gates talking. So he's had this mania for this concept of killing off the vast majority of human beings to create this one world situation that he thinks is absolutely virtuous. So I think that he is the best, to my mind, he's the best candidate for this.
Well, it makes sense. He's certainly part of the ruling elite, the cabal at the top. He might be the man behind this, although I would honestly think that it would be a little more hidden. Occult, not right in our face like Gates, although they do look Gate-like, you're right. That's a good point. I don't know if they're capable of that kind of puns, but it is kind of...
I think they may be. They may be.
It's provocative. Yeah, well,
you know,
they've got some really...
There's no way to know for sure. You know, there's no way. What I've tried to familiarize...
What happened? Yeah. What happened to the records? We're running out of time
with the facts that we have available, and you can try to deduce what you can from them. But the whole thing was such a secret undertaking from the beginning. It sounds like something from Freemasonry or a cabal.
Oh, I completely concur. Freemasons for sure. For sure. Oh, yeah.
Well, for sure, because the Freemasons literally built this place. They literally built it.
Everything. Look at Washington, D.C., the layout. Oh, it's all there. Sure.
But it's so it's kind of interesting, and I don't think that it's really a decisive thing except in its destruction. At least I would hope that it is decisive in its destruction. So there is some spirit of the American Revolution which is still in existence with some of us. And
what happened to the pieces that were left when they hauled it away?
The pieces that were left all have been... as I understand it, from there was an article in the Atlanta Courier, was that thing, that, which said that all the pieces have been disposed and that no one is able to have access to them at all. That the county in Georgia made sure that there's nothing left of it at all. So, kind of interesting. I wish I had a piece for you, but I don't.
Oh, I'm kidding. Listen, I'd make my own if I were going to do something, put something civilized on it.
But it's an interesting thing as part of our time, and of course, demolishing the New World Order, whatever they want to call it, is not as easy as knocking over a building, but it's a start.
No. That was really terrific, Frank. Thank you for sharing.
Well, thank you for listening. It's a lot of speculation, but what else can you do?
No, that's real research, and you came up with what you came up with. No, I don't hear anybody else talking about it.
I couldn't go any further.
No, you did great. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
We will talk to you next month, and keep up the good work, and be safe.
Thank you, and that goes double for you. I hope everything works out real well for you, Jeff.
Thank you, Frank. All righty. Talk soon. Mr. Frank Joseph, and all of his books are more than worthy reading. They're phenomenal books. We will be right back with Mitch Henderson next.